We now return you to our regular program, Punk News Podcast, episode 608. Let's roll. Brothers or brothers and sisters, like Forrest Gump and Lieutenant Dan in Vietnam. Is that how you feel? Is that precisely how you feel?
Yes, yes, we are blood brothers. We have been bonded through the hunt for news, the news front lines.
Are you Lieutenant Dan or am I Lieutenant Dan and you're Forrest? Like, who's Forrest and who's Lieutenant Dan? And have you seen Forrest Gump? Maybe you haven't even seen Forrest Gump.
I have seen Forrest Gump. Lieutenant Dan's guy gets his legs blown right. off? Okay. I don't really remember a whole lot about it. I just remember that part. Like, and they make a shrimp company, and he tries to go off the boat, but something happens. I'm going to go with "You're Batman, I'm Robin." How's that?
Oh, well, all right, fantastic. So anyways, M. Moore's been doing a great job covering the news. I covered the news while M. Moore was on vacation, and now I'm kind of taking DC with some interviews, and M. Moore's doing a great job covering the news. And you Thanks. Can always check out the news at punknews.org. But that finally back from her Euro vacay. Hallie Bullock, did you enjoy your Euro vacay? And which areas of Euro did you stay on your vacay?
It's me. Hello. It was so fun. It was good. I was in Edinburgh for like 2.5 weeks at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, which is like a big international arts festival. And that was completely incredible, like so inspiring. I saw so much good, just like theater and music. And I had my kid with me, so a lot of circus and then I put my husband and my kid on a plane back to Jersey, and I was like, peace out. And then I went to Portugal with my dear old friend, and it was awesome. The two of us just ran around Portugal for like a week. So yeah, I was like gone for almost a month. It was really, really like a dream. Yeah, just total dream. It was amazing.
So what was Portugal like? Was Portugal like Spain? Was it totally different? What did you do in Portugal? How was the food?
I haven't been to Spain, so I don't know. I would love to go to Spain. That's like definitely very high up on my list. Although I will say, like, part of why I did this trip to Portugal is that, you know, you guys know that I like taken the environment very seriously, and I really try to be responsible about my carbon footprint. So I was already flying over to Europe to get to Scotland, and it is quite a cheap and easy flight to get from Scotland to Portugal. And I've always wanted to go to Portugal, and I thought to myself, I don't know how many times I'm going to allow myself to be like heading across the Atlantic Ocean, you know, in these coming years. And so I felt, I've already burned the gas of having to get over across the ocean. So why don't I maximize it and like hit up Portugal while I'm at it? And it was completely, I don't know. Yeah. If you have a chance to go and you feel like you haven't done a ton of traveling like that and haven't been burning a ton of fossil fuels and can justify going, then like, go. Oh, it was crazy. You know, that streets are, I mean, a lot of people know this about Portugal, but my mind was blown because the streets and the buildings, everything is like tiled. Everything is like these beautiful, the streets are all these beautiful mosaics. The building facades are all this like absolutely gorgeous, like rich, like tile. It's like so beautiful. You want to like eat it, or it's just like, it's really just so dreamy and picturesque. Lisbon is all built up into these hills. And so you're like riding these little street cars up through these really narrow streets, up these really, really steep, it's like built sort of into the mountains. It's just so old. You get to cities like that. And, you know, coming from New York, I feel like New York, is like a very old city with a lot of rich history. And as soon as you set foot in a city like Lisbon, you're like, oh, New York is like a half of a second old, and it's like ugly and everything's new.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have like this, it's not like colorful and historical and quirky. It's not as like quirky. I mean, what, New York's wonderful. I'm not actually ragging on New York, but just comparatively, I don't know. It was so beautiful. And then we spent like 3 days in Lagos, which is like on the coast, and these just dramatic coastline and huge, crazy rock formations out in the ocean. And I got to like kayak out there. It was amazing. Totally amazing. Like trip, really, like, you know, one of those trips where like I'll remember it the day I die. It's like so, so, so great.
Did everyone in Scotland were like, "Hootman, welcome to Scotland"? Was everyone talking like that in Scotland?
I mean, they had Scottish accents, but they did not sound like that. How was the cheese? Is Scotland known for cheese?
Yeah, Scotland's famous for its cheese. Yeah.
I mean, honestly, we spent a lot of time eating at vegan restaurants because they have a lot of really good vegan food there. Like really good vegan food. I don't know what the deal is with that in Edinburgh. I guess the cheese was good. Yeah, the cheese was fine. It was cheese. I liked the scones. I liked the, what else did I like? We like to eat jacket potatoes when we're there. This is like my fourth trip to Scotland. So we do like jacket potatoes. It's like a nice baked potato stuffed with all kinds of like crud. And then I like to eat that like honeycomb candy. Do you know what I'm talking about? In the UK, they got this like candy called like honeycomb. Oh my God, so good. I eat these like candies that you can only get at Marks and Spencer called Percy Pigs. It's like this big gummy pig face. It's like fucking so delicious. And what else did I ate so much candy while I was there. You got, honestly, I don't know how the cheese was because I mostly ate candy while I was there.
Is Scotland known for candy?
I mean, I just really like candy and they have a lot of really good candy there that I don't, that's like not easy to find in the States. They got jelly babies. Don't even fucking talk to me about jelly babies. I'll eat jelly babies all day long. They got jelly babies. They got the Percy Pigs. You got all your Cadbury stuff. It's just, yeah. I ate a lot of candy.
Why have you been to Scotland so many times?
I was there on tour once. I was there as a student once. And then I've gone twice for this Fringe Festival.
So if I can only go to Scotland or Portugal, where should I go?
Oh, man. Fuck, dude. No, you can't ask me that. I mean, that's two totally different places. It depends what appeals to you more. Like,
I'm asking which group of people is superior. Who are the superior people? The Portuguese or the Scottish?
No, I'm not weighing in on that. I'm going to get hate mail. I'm not. First of all, I don't even have an actual opinion about that. They're both wonderful people. I mean, maybe, you know, honestly, if you were really going to like really force me to say where to go, I would just maybe say to go to Portugal, just because culturally it feels so, 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 so different from where we come from. Scotland also markedly different, but it's not as like, it doesn't just like hit you in the face like that. You're just, when you're walking down the streets of Portugal, you're just looking around and you're like, I have never seen anything like this in my life. It's so different from where I'm from, you know? So, you know.
Last question.
Yeah.
I feel people in America are bigger dicks than they were 10 years ago and way bigger dicks than they were 20 years ago. Were the people in Scotland and Portugal bigger dicks or not as big dicks as Americans or the same? Yeah.
I can literally say no one was a dick to me ever in either place ever.
Like when I was in like Netherlands, like everyone is just totally pleasant all the time. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, why can't we be like this? You know?
Yeah. I wonder how, you know, I've never traveled to America from another country. Like I wonder what people's experience is like. Because, yeah, most places I've traveled, I just found that people are really lovely. I would say the only place I didn't totally feel like that was maybe in France. But also, politically, there was quite a fucking stir up with fucking George W. Bush and his fucking bullshit war the last time I was in France. And so I think maybe Americans were getting some, we were getting some attitude because of that. So that was, it was hard to separate out, like, how the French are towards tourists versus how they were just particularly reacting to like American accents at this time, that time, because it's probably just a knee jerk thing of like, ah, fuck you, you know?
Well, there you have it. Hallie Bullitt ranks the Portuguese as the superior people, followed by the Scottish, followed by the French. Anyways, we're going to play a track and then we're going to come back and talk about some cool stuff. The track we're going to play is the new solo cut from the new solo album by Black Dahlia. This is Contraband. Off introducing Ralph Champagne, and it's about Ralph Champagne smuggling drugs for the Mexican cartel. Let's roll.
I was 3 weeks out of trucking school and green behind the ears. Stopped in at old Hamburger Dan's to slam a couple beers. When a geezer sidled up beside me asking for a smoke, said, son, I'll offer 15 large for driving, that's no joke. Now I try to make an honest buck, but money is my weakness. My ears perk like a jockey boy, two lengths from winning Preakness. I said 15 grand for moving freight, there's got to be a catch. He smiled just like a rattlesnake and blowing out his match. He told me, son, you'll need your gun, cause what we're towing, we ain't showing anyone. Flush that transmission, we're on a mission. So pull your truck on up and I'll get busy hitching.
We're hauling contraband all across the land, smoking like a locomotive, catch us if you can. We're hauling contraband out on a five-night stand,
I said, Mr. I accept your late night offer on behalf of folks like me, so poor sometimes we cry to keep from laughing. And you don't need to say exactly what it is you're loading. Just thank the Lord my bulldog's running 18 wheels and rolling. Now there's me and Zeke and Hank and Paco, Curtis and Habib. We drive and ship pop fiber in and never watch our speed. The interstate's a dirty place and lizards stalk the back lots. When I hear that devil's voice, I know just where I put my Hancock. He said, son, let's get her done. 100 miles and running hard up 101. Dual clutch transmission and tires hissing. Humping independent freight till ain't no bitching.
We're hauling contraband all across the land, smoking like a locomotive, catch us if you can. We're hauling contraband out on a five-night stand, running out of diesel fuel and running from the man. Tallahassee, Jackson, Baton Rouge, Springfield, Albuquerque, Sarasota too. We've been rolling for a week and no one stopped to take a leak.
Beware the heat, cause man, we're hauling contraband. Lights are flashing, sirens blasting in the rear view, yeah, it's true. But if you can't see my mirrors, Johnny Law, I can't see you. Bullets whizzing by the cab while alligators chew the axles. A thermos full of coffee, 20 reds and 13 Paxels. Ducking smoky, rifles high like Annie Oakley. Diesel fumes about to choke us, but no lawman ever broke us. We're all in and we're hauling, hearing Angel Gabriel calling. DOT and ICC behind us, 18 wheels and falling. They said, son, you'll have your fun, just like a pirate on the road to old Zion. You must beware, round every bend, from Chattanooga straight on through the bitter end. But till then,
we're hauling contraband all across the land, smoking like a house on fire, catch us if you can. We're hauling contraband out on a five-night stand, running out of diesel fuel and running from the man. We're hauling contraband all across the land. We're hauling contraband all across the land.
We're back, and like I said, Black Dahlia, my man, one of my very favorite artists of all time. I think one of the greatest songwriters of all time, and I mean that without hyperbole. I mean truly, when it comes to songwriting in the classic 50s, 60s pop songwriting context, the beautiful simplicity of a song, I think Black Dahlia is as good as anybody else you can find. Anybody, and I even mean the biggies. And so anyways, he just put out a new album called Introducing Ralph Champagne, and it is basically him doing Americana, country, and folk. And I actually heard this literally almost 2 years ago in the not final mix form, and I was absolutely blown away by this. I think all 11 tracks, I think the song craft is so good. I think there's so much clever stuff in there, and I think he subverts a lot of cliches in there that you'll catch if you listen to. And I just think the performance, the songwriting is fantastic. I think it just goes to show how Black really is a master songwriter. People often think of the Dwarves as a, quote, shocking band or whatever, and they are shocking. Although, honestly, in 2022, it's kind of hard to be shocking, to tell you the truth. For 1989, they were shocking. but despite the fact that their songs are amazing, there's so much clever writing, references, and really deep thought underneath that, and I think he kind of really brought that to the top with this Introducing Ralph Champagne record. I just think it's an incredible, incredible record. And I know people are going to think I'm biased, but like, honestly, there's lots of bands I'm a fan of, and you hear the new record and you're like, oh, it's kind of cool. like, you know, Rolling Stones, when they put out Bridges to Babylon, I was like, they're best, but I'm going to lie to myself and kind of try to like it, you know. But this record, like, if this was, even if this was an artist I never heard before, I would absolutely love it. I think this record is absolutely fantastic. And it just goes to show, man, Black really is the tops. I hope he does some sort of solo tour on this or something. I don't know if he will or if he won't. I did see Black do a literal three-hour Ralph Champagne show in Las Vegas with Mark of Devo sitting right there. And you, listener, try to keep a hungry 10 a.m. Vegas audience enthralled for 3 hours. You couldn't do it. Black could do it. And more.
Yes.
I'm not sure where you would go on this one because – I know you are a fan of a lot of the legendary bands, but also you are a fan of some of the modern wave punk bands, and I think a lot of those bands, not necessarily you, I think a lot of those bands might not like Black, even though I think they don't really know who Black is, and maybe they miss the point. But anyways, I'm putting words right now. What did you think of introducing Ralph Champagne?
Yeah, so I think I mentioned this on the podcast before. It's the I have not really listened to the Dwarves, and I need to kind of give them a fair shake, and like me not listening to them has nothing to do with anything. It's just like, oh yeah, they just weren't a band that I was into, so they weren't really in my orbit, but we talk about them quite a bit, so I should listen to them. So that's where I went into this album with. It was like, okay, I am just gonna listen to it, and I'm gonna give it a fair shake, and I'm gonna put it on, and there we are. Because last week we talked a bit about like what retro Americana like entails and all this kind of stuff. So it's like, okay, I kind of know what I'm going to hear, but I kind of don't. So he can really sing. I'll give him that. He has a very nice voice. It fits really well with the style that he's going for. I think that the style was pulled off really well, like with the lyrical delivery and all that kind of stuff. Like, with Contraband, I think it is. That's the one where it's the, it sounds like storytelling.
Right.
Yeah. So like, I think they did a really good job that way. But it's really, I didn't listen to the whole thing. I just listened to a couple of songs, and it's not my cup of tea, this style, but it is good because it sounds like, yeah, you could, or it sounds like what it's trying to be.
Off of what it is. Podcast. Oh, you're fired. Off the podcast. Emily can love it. She's fine. Hallie Bull, where do you stand?
What do you think, John? Did I like this?
Well, see, I know we had Flag on the podcast before, and you didn't really like some of the things that he said.
I did not.
So I'm going to say that you didn't dig the record.
I thought it was great. I thought it was great. Yeah, I thought it was like so enjoyable. I didn't listen to the whole thing. I listened to like a bunch of the songs. I just thought it was so enjoyable, and I am totally with you, John. It just goes to prove that if you can write a great punk song, all a great punk song is like a fucking good melody over some fucking catchy chords, and you can translate that into almost that you can translate those skills into almost any genre. And I thought these were really, really solid like country-esque songs, and I found it just totally pleasant. And he's clearly just such a talented dude to be able to just pull this off, you know? No, wait, but can I ask you, why has this album been sitting around for 2 years?
Nothing crazy, nothing weird, but it's probably not my place to say. I can maybe tell you afterwards.
Oh, okay.
Like very boring reasons, honestly. Like nothing, like, okay. Not like lawsuits, just yep. Honestly, boring reasons why lots of albums get delayed for a while, you know what I mean? So yeah. Nothing weird or crazy, just the mechanics of the record industry, if you will, you know?
Got it.
But I mean, like, I've probably listened to this album over 100 times over the past 2 years. I love how, like, on like Lolita Goodbye, which one thing with Blag is when he does his more quote serious stuff, he did a record called Candy Now, which was him doing like 60s pop. Is there's always the question, should he do it totally straight or should he Blag Dahlia it up? And I don't know if there's an answer to that. Lolita Goodbye sort of feels like a Dwarves album as opposed to a Blag, a Dwarf song as opposed to a Blag song. But I like how, you know, in the songs, it's always the guy, you know, you know, is going after young girls or whatever. But in this song, he dumps his young girlfriend for her mom. And if you watch, the video is really hilarious. It's him and the mom sneaking around, which is an age-appropriate woman with a cool rock star, which is funny. But at the end of the video, there's a knock on the door. It opens up, and it's grandma, and like his mouth drops, which I think is really, really funny.
That's awesome.
But also, there's like really, really sweet song, like Elementary Love Song, which is lit, like, I think you could sell that song to like Taylor Swift or anybody like anybody that's more wholesome, if you will. Like there's really just wonderful songwriting here, and it's not all edgy, although some of it edgy. But also I absolutely love the song Contraband, because I don't know if there's any other country song about there's lots of country songs about being an outlaw or a bad guy, but are there any country songs where you're singing from the perspective of a drug smuggler? And you're not sorry about it, you know. I think that's a pretty cool angle that I don't think I've ever heard, you know. So, anyways, maybe on the other side of the spectrum, White Lung has announced their final album. White Lung hasn't been around for about 4 or 5 years. Their final album coming out is called Premonition, and it's out December 2 via Domino. And one of the main reasons that it took so long to come out, and the band was explicit about this in the press release, is singer Mish Way kind of got married and started a family, and so the band got put on the back burner, which isn't a bad thing. But I think they didn't explicitly say this, but it seems like now that they all have kind of other things going on, they kind of want to cap White Lung off with, I guess, a proper send-off as opposed to a fade-away, which is smart and good. And they put out two videos. Both videos play with perspective, or not, I guess that's not even the right word, play with size, in that both videos, I think both videos, they're really, really tiny people, which kind of reminded me of Neil Young's, not Never Mind the Rust. What's that album called? What's the Neil Young album where he's really
After the Harvest?
No, Live Rust. Where, like, live, he played with gigantic speakers, gigantic microphone in front of him. At any rate, White Lung, when they first started, they were a really loud, fast, noisy punk band. And they still kind of are, but these tracks are kind of more post-punk. And I dug both of them, and I think they sounded real good. And Hallie Bullet, what do you think of White Lung? What do you think of these videos?
Yeah, I liked this stuff. I liked the videos. I will say the video for, what was it? I watched Date Night first. And I liked the video. I thought it was really interesting. Like you said, they're like really tiny, but also she's like really big. She's sort of like the singer plays kind of two different, right? She plays like kind of two different characters, like a big character and a tiny character.
Mish Way.
I thought it was like very sort of like, I don't know. It kind of took me someplace. It gave me like a lot of feelings. It was like a little dark, a little unpredictable. I was really enjoying like the moodiness of it and just the sort of the artsiness of the video. And then at the very end, she turns into like a giant gummy bear. And like, it was a very head scratchy moment for me. It was like clearly intentional, but I was like, this video has felt very serious this whole time. And then now just like the last shot is of just like a giant gummy bear. And it like a little bit lost me, but I, you know, it was just whatever statement they were trying to make. I just couldn't quite go there. But for the most part, I liked it. And then dude, I listened to and watched the video for Tomorrow. That is a fucking scorcher. That song is so good, and I loved the video. And they play with perspective again, and so the drummer has this like big giant drumstick, and they're, you know, they obviously used a lot of green screen, so she looks as if she's, you know, this tiny thing playing this big drum set. And my favorite was the guitarist, because they use green screen and they make it look like he's basically like climbing around over the neck of his guitar playing this like very like cool guitar part. I really enjoyed it, and I thought the song was A+. I would listen to this song like 100 times. I thought it was so good. So I'm disappointed that this is this band's last album, right? I'm disappointed, but I totally get it. But I also, you know, not to go on for too long or make it into too big a conversation, but it did make me wonder, you know, is it just too hard for bands to make any money without touring constantly anymore? And so for bands like this, where this, you know, people have started families, I'm just wondering if this had been a band, you know, 25 years ago, would they have been able to stay a band? Because they would have been able to make enough money off of music sales that they wouldn't just have to be, right? I feel like the model now for bands is just you have to tour relentlessly if you want to make any money off of it at all. And so it just made me wonder, is the model that we have now, it just putting the nail in the coffin for bands earlier, especially sadly, I think still for women, you know, who start families, who don't feel like they can be on the road all the time. But that, you know, so that's a separate thing that I'll let you guys comment on or not. But I was thinking that while I was
I'll comment on it right away.
When you start talking, it's like so loud and so blown out, and then it like mellows out. What is that? What's happening?
That's my new style. That's how I interrupt you guys. I turn my way up to dump truck my way in, you know. Jesse Michaels actually talked about this about 7 or 8 years ago, and the fact of the matter is Classics of Love probably would be a full-time band if he was able to make any money off it whatsoever, which is a huge disgrace on the punk scene, basically. Basically, what he's saying is art, doing art for money is a bad, is probably not going to work. But you need money to do art. And so when a band is losing money or can't make any money off their art, it literally makes it harder to do because you have to be devoting your energy to other places in order to making money. And Jesse had this great quote that I'm paraphrasing. And basically he said, it's better that an artist makes money doing art than them making money flipping hamburgers at McDonald's because they're not using what they're good at McDonald's or however you want to phrase that. And so you're absolutely 100% right, which is why I can't stand bootleggers. I hate streaming, and it's a real bummer, and it really is squeezing art. And really, we're getting cheated out of a lot of amazing albums and art in general because of that. And I remember back in the 90s and 2000s, people were like, you know, the best art comes from people that don't do it for the money. They just do it because they want to do it. Completely oblivious to the fact that, well, if you got to go to work for 8, 10, 12 hours, it's a lot harder to get together with your friends and write songs when all you want to do is sleep, you know, or you got to change the baby, or you got to go do your laundry, or you got to go help out your parents, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And so it really was a naive and unfounded perspective back then, frankly. I mean, I'm always a fan of artists getting paid as much as they can for their music. Now, does money ruin some great bands? Sure. But not having money, I would say, kills way more bands, if you
will. Yep.
And more. What if Emmore's like, I think all artists should be broke. If I'm not rich, they should be rich either.
Yeah, don't get better, get bitter. Yeah.
Did you just make that up? Don't get better, get bitter?
I hope so, because I don't think I read it anywhere. Thank you. That's $1 million idea.
You could name a book or an album or anything. Like, don't get better, get bitter. You can even, and more.
Yes.
Pay me money. I'm going to register that trademark for you. You're going to sell a million bumper stickers.
I'm up for it. Then I'll have music to make art. And it all fits in. See?
Yes.
It all fits in.
I actually think, Hallie, but I'm going to let Emmore talk, but I'm going to steam truck my way in again. I think Emmore could sell a lot of t-shirts that say just that.
Don't get better, get bitter.
I think so, too.
We probably should be broadcasting this because I pretty much just gave a million bootleggers license to steal Emmore's idea.
We will find you, bootleggers, and we will bankrupt you. Take that.
So, Emmore, White Lion, what do you think?
Sorry?
White Lion, what do you think?
Oh, yes. Okay, so White Lion are a band that I have meant to check out for years. And it's one of those things. I have a list of things to listen to, and then I end up listening to something completely different, or my headphones are broken, or like there's some cosmic force that is like, no, this is not the time. So I was really glad to see they're releasing new stuff, because it's like, yay, I remember them. I'm going to listen to them now. So I've only listened to these two songs. I haven't listened to any of the other stuff yet. But I am really bummed out that this is their last album, because it's like these songs are really good and I'm excited for the album and I want to listen to their previous stuff now. So I think it's smart with what they're doing with, we're going to go out on a high. We've had these songs for years now because, like, it was delayed. John, like you said, because of the starting a family, and then COVID pushed everything back too. So it would be nice to see them like tour. It would be nice to see them obviously remain a band and still make art and do things. And I think that there should be more in that area, like support wise, if things aren't going super well, like if you can't tour and whatever. Because like if you stop and think about it, like what makes life worth living are these things. Like they are music, they are painting, they are writing, they are other visual arts. They're all sorts of things. Like they're things that are really, really valuable, but people, again, don't pay for or steal or take for granted or whatever. And it's very, very frustrating. So I think there should be something there, more on that side. Both of the videos were great with the perspective sizing and stuff. The first video date that I watched was Date Night 2, and I was reading something about the video where in an interview the band mentioned that the large version of the singer is supposed to be God.
Mm-hmm.
And stuff, and then I was like, oh, that's really cool. And there's all these like other things, so I rewatched it with that in mind, and it was like there's just so much going on and so much meaning and so much, like, it's so cool. The part where she sticks the cigarette in her eye and it's just like hanging out there in her mm-hmm. eye, that made me think of the Corinthian from Sandman, and I was like, this is not what I should be thinking about. I should be thinking about this in the context of the video. So yeah, it was really cool, and I really liked how surreal it was. And the video for Tomorrow was hilarious. Like Hallie, like exact, like same thing. Like the guitarist, just like it, that was perfect. You can see him like just pawing at it and then jumping and like all sorts of stuff. And it was so, so funny. The drummer was great too and stuff. And the person in the audience has like this paper mache looking mask. And when they stand up, they're wearing a diaper with this massive safety pin. In it, and it was just like, what is happening? I love it, but like, what is happening? So I'm excited for a new White Lung. Bummed that it's final White Lung, but excited to dive into the old White Lung.
Well, speaking of money and art going hand in hand, there have been a ton of cancellations, and the listeners might or might not know this is. We basically post the stories that we're going to talk about. We record on Thursday. On Wednesday during the day, I email out the stuff we're going to talk about, and we talk about it on Thursday night. And so I linked together three cancellations that all happened at the same time. Between the time I informed Hallie and M of the cancellations, two other festivals got canceled. So basically, Punk and Drop with Baltimore got canceled. Bad Cop canceled a tour. Pears canceled a tour. And then also today, it was like Green on the Green or something, or Day on the Green, basically like this pro-weed festival that a bunch of punk bands play at got canceled. And When We Were Hungry Fest, which had quote, New Black Flag and Madball and a whole bunch of other bands, Voodoo Glow Skulls, looking for other bands that I might know here. Anyways, that festival got canceled too. When We Were Hungry Fest kind of had this statement that we see in Punk and Drug in Baltimore. I'm going to read too. Due to unforeseen circumstances, When We Were Hungry Fest 2020-22 was no longer able to take place. We sincerely apologize, blah, 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 blah. Our team has been consistently working around the clock, trying our hardest to make things work, but sadly it was beyond our control. We want to thank everybody, but blah, blah, blah. It's not going to happen. And then Punk and Drublic, I'm going to pull up that statement in a second. People were going back and forth about what the here it is. Here's the Punk and Drublic statement. Due to circumstances beyond our control, Punk and Drublic in Baltimore is being canceled. The cost of they're a little bit more less vague than the other one. The cost of operating the event at this time proved to be impossible. We are terribly disappointed, as we know you are. Blah, blah, blah. Meanwhile, Punk and Drublic is having other versions, I think in Asbury Park or somewhere around there, or Boston maybe. So there are other Punk and Drublics happening. So there's a lot of questions. Why is everybody canceling their tours? Why are these festivals?
Did we lose you, John? Are you there?
that two gangs were playing each other at the thing. So that's why they had to cancel that. With Punk and Drublic, it seemed like it's one of two things. It's either that they simply didn't sell enough tickets, or maybe I don't want to get in a defamation suit here. Maybe they didn't have the funds to pay city permits, if you catch what I'm sending out, you know, those permits, which definitely don't have set values. And definitely there isn't a crisis of permits when you go to get one. That doesn't happen. So anyways, I don't know, man. It's weird. Like everybody's like canceling all these shows and everyone's being vague. Even Bad Cop and Pears, they were like, sorry, we got to cancel. Maybe we'll be back next year. And is it low ticket sales? Is it that nobody's got any money? Or is it that, I mean, there's a lot of festivals anymore, which makes it all the more wiser for me to throw Summer Story 6 as a festival next summer, because those festivals are getting shut down this summer. Is it that there's just too many festivals and people are festivaled out and it's kind of the same bands on all, like, I love the Descendants, but they're on a lot of festivals. You know what I mean? Pairs is on like every festival. And so I can only speculate as which is what we do on this show. I can only speculate as to what it is. My guess is ticket sales are down. There's been a lot of festivals this year because we didn't have shows for like a year and a half or 2 years. So there were a lot of festivals, and people are just kind of fested out. And that combined with city expenses can really add up and kind of make festivals not happen. What I heard through the grapevine was the reason there is no longer Punk Rock Bowling Asbury Park was simply because Asbury Park makes Punk Rock Bowling use their people and their stages and so forth. And so it just was not cost effective. That's what I heard. I don't know if that's true or not, but it kind of makes sense to me. And so I my guess is low ticket sales and more low ticket sales or is Dracula like sending out like threats to people. And he's like, if you play this festival, I'll come suck your blood. But if you tell anybody I threatened you, then I will come suck your blood. So you just have to cancel it. Is it Dracula?
I think it's Dracula. I think Bela Lugosi never really died and he was possessed by the character and became him. But like, who wouldn't want to be a vampire? Like, you get to live forever. I guess there's downsides to that, but like, you get to see lots of shit. And yeah. Yes, so I have a theory about this. I agree with ticket sales probably weren't the best, especially with when we were Hungry Fest. I don't think a lot of people bought tickets for that.
Because I hadn't even heard of it until it got canceled, honestly. Like, maybe that was the problem. They didn't tell anybody about it until they had to cancel it.
I think that's what happened, because, like, it's like, I don't remember seeing this anywhere. I don't know what this is. So I think that is a problem with that one. Bad Cop, in their statement, they said they're rescheduling for next year. They're in the process of doing that. And they had to cancel a bunch of shows in the U.S., a couple months ago because there was a COVID case in the touring party and they lost a bunch of money. So in the statement that they released, they kind of allude to that. They're like, we would love to be able to tour in Europe and the UK and stuff. But right now, with our luck with the health issues, we can't afford it if things go south kind of idea. So I think that's what's behind a lot of cancellations. I don't think it's behind Punk and Drublic cancellation. I don't think it's behind When We Were Hungry cancellation. But I think with the bands that are canceling their shows, I think that's what it is. Because right now, as it's projected, like cold weather, we're moving into the fall and winter. The tours were scheduled for the fall and winter. With more people being in an enclosed space where a lot of people aren't wearing masks anymore. So there's that. There's droplets going around. You can't really – ventilation gets harder in the winter. So I think a lot of bands are like, oh, shit, like we might have another wave. We might have everything booked and we might lose everything again. So I think it's out of an abundance of caution. That would be my two cents. On that, because I think there are other bands who have canceled tours since, because I don't remember exactly who the band was, but today I saw there were two other European tour cancellations. So everything's kind of happening all at once. Hallie, what's your take on the cancellation situation?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, so I listened to this talk show host on WNYC, Brian Lehrer. He's just like super smart. It's just one of my favorite radio shows. And he had a segment the other day on Broadway and how Broadway is just not bouncing back. They're just only, you know, they're really, the shows are averaging like 60% of the ticket sales that they used to do pre-pandemic. And they had like a really thoughtful conversation about it on their show. And essentially, like, anyone who knew anything about it was kind of like, yeah, this is just sort of inertia. People just kind of, they got out of the habit of going to Broadway and they found other things to do at home. And they just, whatever that muscle is of like, oh, let me just go out and see a thing. I want to see stuff. It's just kind of atrophied in people. And then they were also pointing out that the Broadway crowd is, you know, some of it can be like an older crowd. And if they've taken away the mask mandates, then maybe some of the older people don't feel safe. But, you know, in that conversation, they were sort of talking about the music, the live music scene, as if it has bounced back. But listening to it, I was like, I'm not sure about that. I think there is a lot of inertia. I think people did just kind of get used to just being home and watching their Netflix. And, I mean, that's what I sort of think. But it may be, John, it may be, like you said, it may be just an oversaturation of festivals thing. I heard the ticket sales were not good for that Frantic City festival that's happening in Atlantic City, which is a great lineup. That's like Yola Tengo and Rocket from the Crypt and Bouncing Souls and Shannon the Clams and Murder City Devils. I mean, Titus Andronicus, like great, great, great lineup. And I heard ticket sales weren't great for that. Although again, with that, maybe it's, you know, the Atlantic City scene, I think they're trying to bring it back and revitalize it, but that hasn't been like a super strong music scene in recent years. So I don't know. It's so hard to say, right? There's so many factors that it could be, but if you ask me, I would say the biggest one is just that people are still trying to remember that going out to see live performance is something that enriches their lives. You know, people are like, oh, well, I've been getting by without this and I feel okay. So I don't know, John, what do you, John, you think it's mostly just the festival thing? There's just too many festivals.
Well, I mean, I don't know how I got through 2.5 years without seeing Yola Tengo. I mean, because anytime I'm feeling good about myself, I just need to listen to Yola Tengo and I can realize how horrible the world can be. No,
Yola Tango's not that dark. Come on, there are darker bands. You like darker bands than Yola Tengo.
I meant they're just really boring. honestly, with Frantic City, I don't really see a whammy. Like, I see a lot of bands that are kind of in the same, that's kind of have the same kind of listeners, but I don't see like, wow, I can't believe so-and-so is playing for Frantic City, you know?
Yeah.
But I think it's oversaturation. And honestly, I really am kind of, I am surprised about Punk and Drug with Baltimore, because the fact of the matter is Fat Mike knows how to sell festival tickets, man. Like, Punk and Drug, like, the festival was pretty big. I'm really, really surprised they had to cancel it in Baltimore. Really surprised. I guess it's just ticket sales. I mean, yeah. Like I know NoFX. Not that I'm a huge NoFX fan, but people definitely go see NoFX. Let me see who and then we'll change topics. But let me see what the lineup was. I know it was Nightbirds and NoFX, and I think Descendants. But I'm telling you, one second. The Baltimore lineup was the following. Here we go. Oh no, that's the beer. That's the beer.
It's not easy to find. Listen, you know why you're struggling with this? Because it is fucking not easy to find. The website sucks. They, so many of the shows, they say like, they'll list like the three headliners and then they just say and more. And then like, fucking good luck to you to try to figure out who the hell else is playing each show. It's like not, it's not a well organized
NoFX, Descendants, Face to Face, Lawrence Arm, TSOL, Nightbird, Susie Moon. That sounds like a real as far as ticket sales, that sounds like a real whammy to me, you know?
Yeah.
NoFX and Descendants.
Yeah.
Like, to me, I think people are just festivaled out. That's what I think. And also, I love the Descendants. I love it. Well, actually, that's not true. I like the Descendants a lot. I love the first Descendants album, but I like Descendants. I'm definitely a fan. I think they've played a lot of festivals now, and I think their strategy was, well, let's not play normal gigs. Let's just do festivals. which from a financial standpoint is a great move because you get paid as much as if you were touring all the time, but you're only doing 10 or 12 dates a year and you're making really good money. But that being said, I think the punks have seen, like, when the Descendants first got back together like 6 years ago, it was a huge event. And now it's like, oh, cool, the Descendants are playing again. So I just think ticket sales are low. That's what I think. But I don't know. I'd love to know why this is all happening at once, frankly.
Yeah.
It's like the same thing with music publishing. It's like, all these gigantic power players are buying Stevie Nicks music publishing. Neil Young's, well, actually not Neil Young, that's a bad example. Who else? Bruce Springsteen, David Bowie, Public Enemy. It's like, why are you buying publishing now? Publishing is worth less now than it's ever been worth. So why are you buying it? And there's got to be something behind there, I think. Or maybe there's not. I don't know.
You don't think it's just like a licensing thing? Because licensing is still huge and there's still money to be made in licensing.
There is money to be made in licensing, but is there $250 million worth to be made in licensing over? Because
over like, time, get, maybe.
Maybe. I mean, maybe that is the. I mean, honestly, if something is not worth that much money, then like when house values are low, that's the time to buy the house. So maybe because you know the value of music is low, that's the time to buy publishing.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, think about it. Stevie Nicks is what, 65 or 70? Yeah. Well, you know. And also, and we're getting way off topic here, I'll wrap this up. But also, copyrights don't last forever. Copyrights only last life of the author plus 70 years. David Bowie's been dead about 5 years. So the David Bowie estate isn't selling the copyright to David Bowie forever. They're only selling it for 65 years, you know? So I don't know. Mm-hmm. Anyways, let's play some music. What do you guys want to hear? White Lung or what do you guys want to hear?
White Lung.
Yeah.
Let's play some White Lung. We will play the one that Hallie...
Tomorrow.
And this is White Lung, and we'll be right back. Record Store Day 2022 has announced the list And the list, actually, I thought is better than the past couple of lists. On the list this year is Joe Strummer, a Joe Strummer live set. Let's see what else. A David Bowie record, the vinyl version of the Next Day EP, another Devo side project, the Cure's Wish album. Let's see what else. Duran Duran. Ooh, a very cool Dead Milkmen reissue, a reissue of Metaphysical Graffiti with a bonus new 7-inch, which I'm extremely psyched about. A bunch of Fleetwood Mac stuff, as always. Let's see what else is coming out. Is there any Iggy Pop stuff coming out this year? There usually is.
Yeah, I pray.
I'll pray. Iggy Pop's highly in demand record where he just reads French poetry. I mean, you know, we've talked Record Store Day to death, and at this point, it is what it is. It's overpriced records with some really cool stuff in there. Sometimes Record Store Day is lazy, and sometimes it's kind of cool. Overall, I'm a fan of Record Store Day, and I'm glad to see that prices seem to have dropped over the past year and a half. For a while, they were like insane, like $25 or $20 for a 7-inch. Now it's down to, quote, reasonable $15 for a 7-inch, which I get it. It's overpriced, and you're supposed to support the store, so I get it. I mean, not that the Record Store organization is in the lining its own pockets, but maybe it's a necessary evil, if you will. At any rate, I thought there's some really cool stuff coming out. Yet again, though, I'm frustrated by the – again, the Joe Strummer estate, I feel, is being very lazy in that, like, all we're getting is, like, a 5 or 6-song acoustic set. I own 4 amazing Joe Strummer bootlegs, Joe Strummer and the Mescaleras bootlegs. Great sound quality, amazing live shows. Why not put those out on vinyl and really make something cool as opposed to here's Joe with a guitar playing 5 songs, three of which are actually kind of boring, but we're not going to admit that to each other because we don't want to talk bad about Joe Strummer, who John actually is a huge fan of. But listen, when you start deifying someone, that's when you recognize that actually they're not quite as flawless as you think they as you hope they would be. Sure. So the point being is a lot of cool stuff. I'd like to get some of this stuff. I'm going to be there. And the thing I want the most is Dead Milkmen. After Dead Milkmen, Joe Strummer. That's what I'm looking for. Hallie Bullitt, do you do the Rec Store Day thing? Do you not? Do you think anything here is cool? And do you agree with my harsh criticism of Joe Strummer as of the past 12 months, who frankly I've been taking a lot of shots at, which maybe some deserved, maybe some not deserved. Joe is great. The Clash are great. But on the other hand, doesn't mean we have to worship every single thing he does.
Well, I remember, right, like, before he died, I think there was a general consensus that, like, his stuff was kind of hit and miss, right? And then once he died, it became kind of, like, not okay to say that anymore, which I get.
Exactly.
You know? Yeah. No, I mean, am I going to be lining up somewhere? No, but I thought some of this stuff was cool. If I can, like... You know, I thought like the Supremes, fucking Where Did I Love Go, looks amazing. That Cure 30th anniversary wish, I would get that. But I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to like, you're not going to see me out on the sidewalk waiting somewhere. So I think it's just a question of like whether I can get my hands on any of this stuff after the fact. And if I can, I can. And if I can, I'm not going to sweat it too bad.
Back in the day, some of the listeners might not even remember this. Back in the 2007, 2008 Record Store Day, if you didn't get on Record Store Day, you were never going to get it. The cool thing now is honestly, like, almost like I didn't even go to Record Store Day because I had something else to do that last time. Actually, no, 2 times ago I didn't go because I had something else to do. Everything I wanted was on the internet, like resellers, like at basically market value or you know, a store price. Mm-hmm. The flippers all bought them, and then they burned through them, and they had ones left over, so it was great. Then last Record Store Day was awesome. I went to Record Store Day, like I usually get there like, you know, 5 a.m., 6 a.m., and get in line. And honestly, it is fun hanging out, talking with people, although actually I'm going to put an asterisk right next to that, but I'm going to come back to that point. But then last time, I had something else to do. I didn't get to Record Store Day until about 5 or 6 o'clock. Everything I wanted was right there. So, I mean, nice. Honestly, like, the cool thing about Record Store Day is pretty much anything you want, unless you want, like, the Grateful Dead box. Which, why?
Oh, you're going in and out, John. Oh. Are you there, John Gentile? Are you there? We're losing you, John.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, now we can.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, anyways. So the point being is pretty much anything you want, you can get afterwards. So, don't pay flipper. I almost paid flipper price on the Ramones box set. And I said, no, John, that's stupid. Don't be me. And I wasn't for once in my life. And I got it for like 160 bucks when flippers were getting like 300 bucks for it. And then it just totally dropped. Anyways, the asterisk that I had is what was I putting my asterisk? I hang out in line at Record Store Day. And it's mostly like, quote, dad record store, record or like college guys that are like really into the Grateful Dead for some reason. So anyways, like also, I'm gonna sound like a total dick here, but it's the truth. Like they'll be like, oh yeah, I love Billy Joel. Yeah, like, and I really like the Live at Madison Square Garden, you know, 1978 record. I'm like, oh yeah, do you have the single disc version of this? Like no matter what they bring up, I know way more than them. So I feign that I don't know as much as I do because I don't want to be a dick and I want to have a conversation. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to be that asshole. Actually, but what do I do? Like they'll start talking about the Clash. I love the Clash. The Clash is my favorite band. You know, I've got Combat Rock. You know, well, do you have the one that's got the extended Death is a Star or the shortened Death is a Star? You know, and like, I don't even mention that. Or they'll say something that's like wrong, like Sandinista, great double record when it's a triple record. But I don't even say that because I don't want to be a dick. But it makes the conversation less fun to me because I'm basically just pandering. And more, what should I do in line? Should I be a dick and just ding everybody on every fact point? Or should I just play along and, you know, try to be a nice person?
I think you can have a happy medium where you show what you know, but you do it in a nice way so no one feels like you're being a dick. So you get the best of both worlds. It is possible.
If someone says, what if someone says, I love Sandinista, best double album ever? What do I say?
Oh, didn't you know it was a triple album, buddy? That sounds kind of like an asshole. So, one minute. I'll think about that.
Do I pinch him on the cheek while I say that?
Yeah. You had to lean in, really. Oh my God, you know what would be so funny? It would probably wouldn't come across wrong, but like, you should just say like, oh, they left out a disc or something. Like, if it's like, oh, it's a double album, where's the third one? Just like, anyway, you got it.
I just smile and nod and say, yeah, that's great. That's so cool. Because I'm trying not to be, anyway, Emmore, anything yes. here that you think is cool, or is it a waste of wax?
Yeah, I had a couple things that were kind of cool. Like, there's a lime green pressing of City Baby Attacked by Rats by GBH, which is really cool. And the other ones were they have a RTJ Quattro album, which is Run the Jewels 4 with like Latin music and stuff. So like, that sounds really cool. Lights is releasing Siberia Acoustic, which is really, really cool. Live at the Hacienda 84 by the Gun Club. I think that'd be really neat. And then there were the two things that just kind of stuck out to me. And they were Dee Snider and Lizzie Hale doing an Xmas song, a Christmas song, and the My Little Pony soundtrack. Because it's just like, how did these things come about?
Well, there you go. Nobody better get in my way of the Dead Milkmen metaphysical graffiti, because I will. Actually, I will. I'll just bite on a lot if I don't get it at the store. Anyway, okay, let's see. We're running a little long, so let's hit a few things, and then we'll wrap this one up. Snakes, Ed Moore and I have been trying to get this for about 3 or 4 weeks. And every time we have a guest on, they're like, I said, M, so what did you think of this record? And she'd be like, it was great. What do you think, Steve from the band? And Steve from the band will be like, oh, I didn't know they had a single out. And we're like, we emailed it to you 3 days ago. And they're like, yeah, I'll have to check it out. It looks cool. It's like, thanks, Steve from the band. At any rate, Snakeskin. Snakeskin she's been in a band called Snakeskin. I forget her real name. Anyways, she's also in the Mercer Paternoster solo band. She did kind of just like a silly one-off TikTok video called Bachelorette. And it went viral. And actually, it went viral after Punk News posted it. So I'm taking credit for everything. I just thought this video was absolutely hilarious. I actually thought the song itself was actually kind of good. And I kind of wish that she like wrote like a full song that was this. I just think it's fun and wacky. And as much as I hate TikTok, this does show the benefits of TikTok and how sometimes things can just be fun and wacky and hilarious. And also, I liked how the commenters hated this.
Yeah.
It just goes to show, like there's a Buzz Osborne quote, when I see how insanely wrong you are, I know I must be right. And that's definitely the truth. Hallie Bullet, Snakeskin, did you think this was hilarious and awesome and viral worthy?
Oh, I laughed out loud. And like, just like clicking on it, you assume it's going to be someone who is either like, because right, you see that it's something about the Bachelorette, and I immediately, I mean, I wasn't thinking about it consciously, but subconsciously, I'm either assuming it's someone that either really dislikes The Bachelorette or someone that like really is like a super fan of The Bachelorette, right? Because culturally, that's all we do anymore. We just like have really, really, really strong polarizing opinions about things. And I just was like so delightful. It's just like she's not really that into The Bachelorette, nor is she really slamming on it. She just sort of has some observations about like some things that she thought about it. And it just is, I don't know. I found it just like a total delightfully uncynical little ditty. And I loved that it wasn't longer. Actually, I totally get what you're saying, John, but like there is something about the like leave them wanting more thing that it's like, kind of just this like this little nugget, this little thought she gets in and out. And I just sort of, it was funny without trying too hard and straightforward. I loved it. I thought it was great. Did you like this?
Yeah, I thought this was awesome. That was one of my first thoughts too, was like, I want the full song. I want it available like on Bandcamp or something, because it's funny and it's just like, it perks you up, and it's really upbeat and it's great. I have also never watched The Bachelorette, and I would 100% watch The Bachelorette if The Bachelorette stated, and I think they should. She made a good case for it. And I hope that because it's gone viral, the producers of the show are listening, and that will be next season.
Well, speaking of Marissa Paternoster, Screaming Females are up to something as well. They're having a show on October 13th, the day before the Low Budget Reunion show, so I'll be there. And they said at the show they're going to have something called Clover. And looking at the picture, it looks like a CD and an LP. Or maybe that's a 7-inch. Is that a 7-inch looking? Yeah, it looks like a 7-inch, doesn't it? So they didn't say what it is, but it looks like they're going to have a CD and a 7-inch called Clover, or maybe something completely different. They were very coy about it, but I'm going to be there. And more, any speculation as to what Clover is?
It certainly looks like a new album. I hope it's a new album. But I could also see them doing something different, being like, hey, it's a book or something. It's just packaged differently. Like, that would be really fun, too. But, yeah, I'm excited to hear your experience at the show. Hallie, what do you think?
I want it to be a new album, but I didn't want to get my hopes up. So I was just, I kind of like, I'm having just neutral expectations. I'm just like, oh, it'll be something. Then if it's a full, if it's a new album, then I get to freak out.
Well, like this, if you set your expectations low enough, you'll never be disappointed. but listen, here's something where people should have high expectations. I'm not trying to blow up anybody's spot, but Off have released a new song. They actually released SND from the album Free LSD. That's going to be out September 30th, which is next week. And Off is going to go on tour. I'm going to see them in Philadelphia. And the song S is, I think it was another one of their experimental tracks, right?
Yeah.
And so I don't know. A lot of people seem to be very excited about Free LSD. And more, are you excited?
I am very excited. The experimental tracks are fun, and I think they're going to have like an actual, I think they're going to have an actual, purpose in the album, but I did kind of have this thought that came to me today was, so they've released, F, L, S, and D now. So it's like, did they make them in part just so they could release a bunch of singles without giving anything really away about the album? Like, and keep the mystery, like, get people excited, but keep the mystery about it. So that was one thing I kind of thought of, but I've been really liking them. They're just, like, they're freaky and exciting and just fun. So I'm very excited for Free LSD, and I can't believe it comes out next week. So, Hallie, did you like S?
No, well, is Kill to Be Heard also on this forthcoming album?
Yes.
Is that the other thing? Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess, you know, I'm excited about it depending on the ratio. Like, I think it's super funny to release, like, this, like, acid, like, fucking noise, jazz, fucking static situation. Like, I think it's really funny to release those as, like, your singles and you have, like, videos for them. But, like, if that really is, like, what most of the album is, I'm going to be kind of bummed because I don't, like, really want to listen to that. You know, I think it's funny. It'll depend on me what the ratio is of, like, actual punk songs to, like, this other experimental stuff. Because I'm with you, Em. I think, like, stuff like that can serve a really great and cool purpose as, like, a palate cleanser on an album as just like a statement, a mood. But like, I am going to ultimately want to hear songs. So I'm going to just, it's going to depend how many actual songs are on this to me.
Well, I have not heard the album, but I'm sure that the listeners are going to love it. I think everyone's going to love it. I mean, I haven't heard it, but you know, I'm sure and I mean, like the listeners might remember, I had some trepidation in that, you know, Off is kind of in a bind, like Sleep was when Sleep reunited. Is if they just make Off number four, is that interesting? But if they do something that's totally different, then it's not Off anymore. And so you kind of, I mean, not always, but a good plan of attack is to kind of find, you know, where it's different and weird, but not totally different. David Bowie was the master of that from 1970 to about 1984 or so. Like, he really, and actually the Rolling Stones pretty much were awesome at doing that from like 1962 to like 1982 or something. You know, some bands are just really good at like keeping their chord different, but doing something new and interesting to really keeping it fresh. I haven't heard the album, and I don't know if Off can do that. But I think they can, and we'll find out. And more. Any closing words for the listeners?
If you're in line for Record Store Day, don't be a dick, but correct people nicely. And watch out for Bela Lugosi.
Hallie Bullitt, do you think people should not be dick in line, or should they be dicks in line?
No, don't be a dick. I'm Hallie Bullitt. What do you think I'm going to say? Don't be a dick. Don't be a dick. I'm loving this Remember Sports tune that M. Moore wrote about on the website Leap Day. I'm loving it. It's amazing. It's more folky maybe than some of the people listening to this podcast are going to be into. But if you like your punk a little folky, check out Leap Day. It's by Remember Sports. It's like super catchy. Her voice is so good.
What should we play to close off the episode?
What do you think, John?
I would say Off. Actually, yeah, let's do it. Let's just play Off.
Yeah.
Take that, listener. Take that. We'll see you next time.